She had told her secretary that she would accept all calls of this kind. They were the appeals for help, and her only source of information. At a time when the voices of railroad officials uttered nothing but sounds designed to avoid communication, the voices of nameless men were her last link to the system, the last sparks of reason and tortured honesty flashing briefly through the miles of Taggart Track.
"Miss Taggart, it is not my place to call you."
"But nobody else will," said the voice that came on the wire this time. The voice sounded young and too calm.
"In another day or two, a disaster is going to happen here, the like of which they've never seen, and they won't be able to hide it any longer, only it will be too late by then. And maybe it's too late already."
"What is it? Who are you?"
"One of your employees of the Minnesota Division, Miss Taggart. In another day or two, the trains will stop running out of here. And you know what that means, at the height of the harvest. At the height of the biggest harvest we've ever had. They'll stop because we have no cars. The harvest freight cars have not been sent to us this year."
"What did you say?" She felt as if minutes went by between the words of the unnatural voice that did not sound like her own.
"The cars have not been sent. 15,000 should have been here by now. As far as I could learn, about 8,000 cars is all we've got. I've been calling division headquarters for a week. They've been telling me not to worry. Last time, they told me to mind my own damn business. Every shed, silo, elevator, warehouse, garage, and dance hall along the track is filled with wheat. At the Sherman elevators, there's a line of farmers' trucks and wagons 2 miles long waiting on the road. At Lakewood Station, the square is packed solid, and has been for 3 nights. They keep telling us it's only temporary, the cars are coming, and we'll catch up. We won't. There aren't any cars coming. I've called everyone I could. I know, by the way they answer. They know, and not one of them wants to admit it. They're scared, scared to move or speak or ask or answer. All they're thinking of is who will be blamed when that harvest rots here around the stations, and not of who's going to move it. Maybe nobody can now. Maybe there's nothing you can do about it either. But I thought you're the only person left who'd want to know, and that somebody had to tell you.
She made an effort to breathe. "I see. Who are you?"
"The name wouldn't matter. When I hang up, I will have become a deserter. I don't want to stay here to see it when it happens. I don't want any part of it anymore. Good luck to you, Miss Taggart."
She heard the click. "Thank you," she said over a dead wire. The next time she noticed the office around her and permitted herself to feel, it was noon of the following day. She stood in the middle of the office running stiff, spread fingers through a strand of hair, brushing it back off her face, and for an instant she wondered where she was and what was the unbelievable thing that had happened in the last 20 hours. What she felt was horror, and she knew that she had felt it from the first words of the man on the wire, only there had been no time to know it. There was not much that remained in her mind of the last 20 hours, only disconnected bits held together by the single constant that had made them possible, by the soft, loose faces of men who fought to hide from themselves that they knew the answers to the questions she asked. From the moment when she was told that the manager of the car service department had been out of town for a week and had left no address where one could reach him, she knew that the report of the man from Minnesota was true. Then came the faces of the assistants in the car service department, who would neither confirm the report nor deny it, but kept showing her papers, orders, forms, file cards that bore words in the English language, but no connection to intelligible facts. Were the freight cars sent to Minnesota?
Form 357W is filled out in every particular as required by the Office of the Coordinator in conformance with the instructions of the Controller and by Directive 11-493.
Were the freight cars sent to Minnesota?
The entries for the month of August and September have been processed by...
Were the freight cars sent to Minnesota?
My files indicate the locations of freight cars by state, date, classification, and...
Do you know whether the cars were sent to Minnesota?
As to the interstate motion of freight cars, I would have to refer you to the files of Mr. Benson, and of...
There was nothing to learn from the files. There were careful entries, each conveying 4 possible meanings, with references, which led to a final reference, which was missing from the files. It did not take her long to discover that the cars had not been sent to Minnesota, and that the order had come from Cuffy Meggs. But who had carried it out? Who had tangled the trail? What steps had been taken by what compliant men to preserve the appearance of a safely normal operation, without a single cry of protest to arouse some braver man's attention? Who had falsified the reports and where the cars had gone? Seemed at first impossible to learn. Through the hours of that night, while a small desperate crew under the command of Eddie Willers kept calling every division point, every yard, depot, station, spur, and siding of Taggart Transcontinental for every freight car in sight or reach, ordering them to unload, drop, dump, scuttle, anything, and proceed to Minnesota at once. While they kept calling the yards, stations, and presidents of every railroad still half in existence, anywhere across the map, begging for cars from Minnesota, she went through the task of tracing from face to coward's face the destination of the freight cars that had vanished. She went from railroad executives to wealthy shippers to Washington officials and back to the railroad, by cab, by phone, by wire, pursuing a trail of half-uttered hints. The trail approached its end when she heard the pinch-lipped voice of a public relations woman in a Washington office, saying resentfully over the telephone wire, "Well, after all, it is a matter of opinion whether wheat is essential to a nation's welfare. There are those of more progressive views who feel that the soybean is perhaps of far greater value." And then, by noon, she stood in the middle of her office, knowing that the freight cars intended for the wheat of Minnesota had been sent instead to carry the soybeans from the Louisiana swamps of Kip's Ma's project. The first story of the Minnesota disaster appeared in the newspapers 3 days later. It reported that the farmers who had waited in the streets of Lakewood for 6 days with no place to store their wheat and no trains to carry it had demolished the local courthouse, the mayor's home, and the railroad station. Then the stories vanished abruptly, and the newspapers kept silent. Then began to print admonitions urging people not to believe unpatriotic rumors. While the flour mills and grain markets of the country were screaming over the phones and the telegraph wire, sending pleas to New York and delegations to Washington, while strings of freight cars from random corners of the continent were crawling like rusty caterpillars across the map in the direction of Minnesota, the wheat and hope of the country were waiting to perish along an empty track, under the unchanging green light of signals that called for motion to trains that were not there. At the communication desks of Taggart Transcontinental, a small crew kept calling for freight cars, repeating, like the crew of a sinking ship, an SOS that remained unheard. There were freight cars held loaded for months in the yards of the companies owned by the friends of pull peddlers, who ignored the frantic demands to unload the cars and release them. "You can tell that railroad to..." followed by untransmissible words, was the message of the Smather brothers in Arizona in answer to the SOS of New York. In Minnesota, they were seizing cars from every siding, from the Mesabi Range, from the ore mines of Paul Larkin, where the cars had stood waiting for a dribble of iron. They were pouring wheat into ore cars, into coal cars, into boarded stock cars that went spilling thin gold trickles along the track as they clattered off. They were pouring wheat into passenger coaches, over seats, racks, and fixtures, to send it off to get it moving, even if it went moving into trackside ditches in the sudden crash of breaking springs, in the explosions set off by burning journal boxes. They fought for movement with no thought of destination, for movement as such, like a paralytic under a stroke, struggling in wild, stiff, incredulous jerks, against the realization that movement was suddenly impossible. There were no other railroads. James Taggart had killed them. There were no boats on the lakes. Paul Larkin had destroyed them. There was only the single line of rail and a net of neglected highways. The trucks and wagons of waiting farmers started trickling blindly down the roads with no maps, no gas, no feed for horses, moving south, south toward the vision of flour mills awaiting them somewhere, with no knowledge of the distances ahead, but with the knowledge of death behind them. Moving to collapse on the roads, in the gullies, and the breaks of rotted bridges. One farmer was found half a mile south of the wreck of his truck, lying dead in a ditch face down, still clutching a sack of wheat on his shoulders. Then, rain clouds burst over the prairies of Minnesota. The rain went eating the wheat into rot at the waiting railroad stations. It went hammering the piles spilled along the roads, washing gold kernels into the soil. The men in Washington were last to be reached by the panic. They watched not the news from Minnesota, but the precarious balance of their friendships and commitments. They weighed not the fate of the harvest, but the unknowable result of unpredictable emotions in unthinking men of unlimited power. They waited. They evaded all pleas. They declared, "Oh, ridiculous, there's nothing to worry about. Those Taggart people have always moved that wheat on schedule. They'll find some way to move it."